Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Congresswoman Susan Davis has announced that she's retiring at the end of her term. Who might run to fill her seat? We'll have details in our Capitol report. Virulent Newcastle disease has been found in Ramona, forcing the killing of exposed poultry. A town hall on this important issue is set for September 10th. Aggressive coyotes have been killing dogs on leashes in Santee and other areas. Find out what you should know on these important issues on our show. On People Power, hear about local water crews helping bring water to paradise. Learn about dangerous cooktops being recalled by three major manufacturers, and hear about steps to prevent jail suicides, as well as a reward offered for info on who fired shots at a Del Cerro synagogue. Find out about an economic crimes forum coming up in East County, and about all the top festivals and events coming up, including powwows, grape stomps, and the grand opening of the Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center. Also hear about the amazing life and accomplishments of former State Senator Wadi Dedda, the first Iraqi-American elected to public office who has passed away at age 98. And we'll be re-airing our interview with Lynn Morgan Spreen, the author of the award-winning novel Dakota Blues. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Capitol Report. In a surprise announcement Wednesday, Congresswoman Susan Davis says she will retire at the end of her 10th term in Congress. Davis states, "I have struggled to make this very difficult decision," adding, "My decision today represents a desire to live and work at home in San Diego." Davis has noted that while she has enjoyed her tenure in Congress, sometimes finding common ground has been challenging, especially in this increasingly divisive political climate, The Hill reports. The 75-year-old Democrat is the dean of the San Diego Congressional Delegation and San Diego's second woman to serve in Congress. She is the second highest-ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee and chairs the Higher Education and Workforce Investment Subcommittee. In a Facebook post, local Democratic Party Chairman Will Rodriguez Kennedy saluted Davis for a, quote, "lifetime of distinguished public service to our country, our county, and our party." Davis says she hopes her successor in office, quote, "will put public interest above self-interest." Democrats vying to win the 53rd congressional district seat being vacated by Davis include Jose Caballero, a Navy veteran and small business owner, and progressive Joaquin Vasquez. Other names floated by party leaders and activists as potential candidates include San Diego City Council President Georgette Gomez, Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, Sarah Jacobs, granddaughter of Qualcomm's founder, Supervisor Nathan Fletcher, and State Senate President Tony Atkins. Thus far, no Republicans have announced plans to run in the 53rd District, though both talk show host Carl DeMaio and ex-Congressman Daryl Issa have been gearing up to run for indicted Congressman Duncan Hunter's neighboring 50th Congressional District seat. Neither live in that district. Potentially, one of them might shift gears to vie for the open seat in the 53rd. Anyone running will need to act fast, since a pre-endorsement meeting of the California Democratic Party is set for October 5th, and the deadline for all candidates to file to run is in December. The solidly blue district has almost twice as many Democrats as Republicans, and nearly 30% who declined to state party affiliation. Hillary Clinton won the district in the last presidential election by 35 points. The district includes La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Spring Valley, part of Chula Vista, and the San Diego communities of San Carlos, Sara Mesa, Linda Vista, and Mission Hills. Davis opposed the Iraq War, supported the Affordable Care Act, initiated the first hearing on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as chair of the House Armed Services Military Personnel Subcommittee. She also helped bring large projects to San Diego, including the San Diego State University Transit Center. Before Congress, Davis served in the State Assembly and was president of the San Diego Unified Board of Education. A former social worker, she first became involved in politics through the League of Women Voters and by being active in her son's schools. Davis said she does not yet know what she plans to do after leaving office, but indicated she has multiple options to continue serving San Diego residents. In a message sent to her constituents, Davis concludes, quote, "I am grateful to have you as engaged and concerned citizens of our great nation and the San Diego community we love."
This is Gerald Stevenson with an important health alert for bird owners. A case of virulent Newcastle disease has been confirmed in San Diego County, the California Department of Food and Agriculture announced Saturday. Newcastle is fatal to chickens 90% of the time and is also deadly to many other livestock birds, including turkeys, ducks, pigeons, and emus. Since an outbreak in other California counties began last year, the state has ordered over 1.2 million birds killed to prevent the spread of the disease in an effort to prevent even worse devastation to the state's poultry industry. The department has not revealed the exact location of the new case. However, East County residents have posted on Facebook that it's in Ramona. Ian Cooley posted that state officials came to his Ramona home over the weekend, killing and removing his chickens without his consent. Other Ramona residents say that veterinarians notified them that Newcastle had been confirmed in Ramona. State officials report that a response team with members of the state and federal agriculture agencies worked through the holiday weekend to establish control measures, including restricting movements of birds, testing near the property where the infection was detected, and euthanasia of both infected and exposed birds. This is the first case of Newcastle in San Diego County since the current California outbreak began last year. As of August 23rd, the U.S. Department of Agriculture had confirmed 449 properties in California infected with virulent Newcastle disease, including in San Bernardino, Riverside, Los Angeles, Ventura, and Alameda counties. Cases have also been confirmed in Utah and Arizona. State officials urge all bird owners in Southern California to be aware of symptoms. Report any sick birds immediately to the Sick Bird Hotline at 866-922-2473 and prevent spread by practicing good biosecurity measures. Here's what bird owners need to know. It is prohibited to take any bird out of a quarantine area. In other counties where Newcastle was confirmed, the California Department of Food and Agriculture has declared the entire counties to be quarantine areas where birds could not be taken in or out until further notice. Be aware of the symptoms. The disease progresses rapidly, and death of birds can occur suddenly, sometimes before any symptoms are seen, spreading rapidly to kill entire flocks. Symptoms may include sneezing, gasping for air, nasal discharge, coughing, greenish, watery diarrhea, decreased activity, tremors, drooping wings, twisting of head and neck, circling, stiffness, and swelling around the eyes and neck. Prevent disease through biosecurity. The disease is spread through feces, secretions, and inhalation. Wash your hands or use a hand sanitizer and scrub boots before entering and when leaving a poultry area or other bird enclosure. Use a foot bath with one part bleach and 10 parts water to dip bottoms of your shoes. Wear disposable coveralls and booties or change into dedicated clothes and shoes worn only in the poultry area. Also clean and disinfect tires and equipment before moving them off your property. Spray tires with Lysol. Try to keep wild birds out of the enclosure since they can transmit the disease. Avoid gatherings where poultry birds are present. The San Diego County Fair this year banned all poultry exhibitions due to fear of Newcastle. If you must attend any gathering where birds are present, change your clothes and footwear, spray any objects with Lysol, and take your vehicle through a car wash immediately afterwards. Do not buy new birds during the outbreak, as long as your area is quarantined. Do not buy feed from the owner of a property where Newcastle was found. Consider vaccinating your birds. The licensed Newcastle vaccine can be purchased at some feed stores or online and is administered via eye drops. However, even vaccinated birds can be carriers capable of spreading the disease and may still be ordered euthanized in an outbreak. If your birds become ill, call the Sick Bird Hotline at 866-922-2473 or humanely euthanize the birds. The state's Department of Food and Agriculture advises, since the longer ill birds are alive, the more the virus reproduces and spreads. dispose of dead carcasses by using double plastic garbage bags, tightly sealed, placed in the trash. Don't dump carcasses outdoors where wild animals could drag them away and spread the virus. Clear debris so sunlight can heat up infected ground, and wait at least 6 months before buying more birds. You don't need to worry about eating poultry. No case of virulent Newcastle disease has ever been transmitted to humans by eating poultry.
After virulent Newcastle disease was detected in Ramona last week and the area placed under a regional quarantine, the California Department of Food and Agriculture has announced that it will hold a town hall at the Ramona Branch Library on Monday, September 9th at 6:30 p.m. Bird owners are invited to come learn more about the disease, how to protect your birds, methods to clean up your property, status of the outbreak, and what to expect in recovery. Virulent Newcastle disease is fatal about 90% of the time in chickens and can also kill other species of birds, so the state enforces mandatory euthanasia, or killing, of infected and exposed birds. But there are steps you can take to minimize the risk of exposure and protect your birds. To report a sick bird or to schedule an appointment to test them, you can call 866-922-2473. And again, the town hall on this disease will be held at the Ramona Library Monday, September 9th at 6:30 p.m. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
For the second time in recent weeks, coyotes killed a leash dog in Santee. The most recent attack occurred Tuesday when Michelle Simarusti was walking her silky terrier named Presley on Palm Glen Drive near her condominium. She told 10 News that as she tugged on her dog's leash after aggressive coyotes approached, the clasp broke and her dog ran off, with the coyotes in pursuit. She says she screamed and a neighbor found the mortally wounded dog, who died in Siamarusti's arms on the way to an emergency pet clinic. She later learned that coyotes killed another dog in the same area several weeks ago. Such attacks are not uncommon. Dogs have been snatched off leashes by coyotes in other local communities, including Mount Helix, Fletcher Hills, and Rancho Penasquitos. So how can you protect your dog from coyotes while on a walk? Coyote vests and spiked collars were designed to ward off coyotes by an owner who lost a dog previously to a coyote attack. They are available at coyotevest.com. Carrying an air horn, bear spray, or pepper spray may dissuade a marauding coyote. One woman in another city reportedly recently halted a mountain lion attack by turning on loud heavy metal music on her cell phone. Hazing coyotes frequenting your neighborhood, such as making loud noises or tossing rocks near them, can help dissuade them. Coyotes are most active in evening, nighttime, and early morning hours, so if you have an option to walk your dog during the daytime, it lessens the odds of an attack. You might also consider taking your dog to a dog park or area where coyote encounters are less likely. An additional option is to build an enclosed run or kennel with a roof to keep out coyotes and other predators such as mountain lions, bobcats, or even hawks and owls capable of carrying off a small dog or cat. For cat owners, a catio can serve the same purpose, allowing pets safe outdoor and exercise space. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world. This is Gene Carpenter with a People Power Report. The wildfire that killed 85 people last year in Paradise, California, burned down nearly the entire town, destroying over 19,000 structures. It also left more than 10,000 residents without water because it was deemed unfit to drink. The fire burned through pipes and also contaminated most water mains with chemicals. So Helix and Padre Water Districts in San Diego's East County have joined with other water agencies around the state to help restore drinking water to many residents in the Northern California community. Now some Paradise residents can turn on their tap for the first time in over 8 months and have clean water to drink, bathe, and brush teeth.
Last month, Paradise's water district was able to restore water quality in most of its water mains, and the focus shifted to helping individual customers test their water and, if contaminated, replace their water lines with a little help from some friends. It's all part of the California Water Wastewater Agency Response Network set up through the State Office of Emergency Services, a system that makes residents in fire-ravaged Paradise, in one sense, more fortunate than those living in Flint, Michigan, where many residential water pipes remain contaminated with lead that makes their water still toxic to drink. Dan Baker from Helix Water led the local team in Paradise, where many residents are still living in trailers, waiting to rebuild. He says, "If you closed your eyes, all you heard were friendly people. Everyone in town was very positive, but when you looked around, there were trucks and workers everywhere, rebuilding." At the end of July, the California Department of Resources, Recycling, and Recovery that they had removed 75% of the structural debris from the campfire in Paradise and Butte County, including 1.6 million tons of ash and debris, over 518,000 tons of concrete, 37,000 tons of metal, and over 446,000 tons of contaminated soil. On August 6, Paradise residents gathered to hear the progress reports from local and state agencies involved in rebuilding the community. The California Office of Emergency Services is developing a plan to remove the hazardous trees still standing. The town is opening a resource center to streamline the permitting process for residents rebuilding their homes, and the school district has made sure the new school year began on schedule. But a safe water supply is still an issue. The water distribution system was contaminated during the fire with benzene, a known carcinogen. Fire officials believe that the system depressurized during the fire and sucked in a toxic mix of gases from burning homes. This also happened in Santa Rosa during the Tubbs fire in 2017. Paradise Irrigation reported to residents on October 6 that the district lifted water advisories on 133 of the homes still standing and is testing and restoring water quality at 30 to 50 more standing homes each week. When Helix offered mutual aid assistance through the Office of Emergency Services, the Paradise Water District said it had cleared the gases from their water mains, but could use help testing and restoring water quality in customers' lines. Helix sent Baker along with Brian Waite from its meters and valve section and John Wilson and Eric Hughes from its construction section to provide that help. The local crews headed north for a week, collecting water samples at meters from each standing home and installing a high line to deliver safe water until the sample was tested and the customer service line approved for use. The Helix Padre workers also helped install hundreds of backflow prevention assemblies to prevent contamination from construction throughout the community. The crew took with them to Paradise a California Strong, Paradise Strong banner, signed by board members and district employees at both Helix and Padre Dam. After their first day in Paradise, Baker emailed Helix Operations Director Kevin Miller. "There's a lot of work up here, but the town is healing. I think I speak for all four of us when I say I'm proud to be a part of this."
This is John Fisteer with a safety alert for consumers. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission has announced a recall by Whirlpool of over 26,000 glass cooktop stoves sold under the brand names Whirlpool, KitchenAid, and Gen-Air. Whirlpool Corporation has received 133 reports of incidents involving the cooktop stove surface elements turning on by themselves, including reports that the stoves have caused fires, property damage, and burn injuries. The products were sold in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada from March 2017 through August 2019, including at Lowe's, Home Depot, Best Buy, other major retailers, and online. Consumers should immediately contact Whirlpool at 888-900-7897 from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, to get a replacement cooktop and free installation, or go to repair.whirlpoolcorp.com. Until you get a replacement, when you are not using the cooktop, turn off power at the circuit breaker, the U.S. Product Safety Commission advises. Don't leave any flammable materials or empty cookware on or near the cooktop. Consumers can also visit Whirlpool.com, KitchenAid.com, or JenAir.com and click on Recall Information for details on specific models in the recall.
The San Diego County Sheriff's Department announced that it has adopted policies to prevent inmate suicides at its jails. The actions follow a report that decried a shocking number of suicides at local lockup facilities. The study by Disability Rights California, an advocacy agency for the disabled, was released last year, Times of San Diego reports. The report noted that over 30 inmates took their own lives in San Diego area jails and prisons since 2010, a rate that far outpaced other county jail systems in the state. The agency concluded that the shocking number of inmates dying by suicide locally pointed to an urgent need for corrective action by the county. In response to criticism raised by the Disability Rights California study, the county hired Lindsay Hayes, an authority on inmate suicides, to make recommendations. So far, the county has addressed 26 of 32 proposed improvements by Hayes and continues to evaluate the rest, according to the Sheriff's Department. Hayes met with detention services officials as well as deputies, nurses, and mental health personnel locally and found that they appeared genuinely concerned about inmate suicide and committed to taking actions to reduce future tragedies. Sheriff's officials noted that to help reduce suicides, the department is developing and implementing programs such as enhanced observation housing and seeking accreditation with the National Commission on Correctional Healthcare. Hayes, a project director with the National Center on Institutions and Alternatives, says the county's efforts have already resulted in a significant decrease in the number of inmate suicides since late 2016. Changes the Sheriff's Department says it made based on Hayes's recommendations include new mandatory suicide prevention and mental health training for employees, better screening and intake procedures to identify those having suicidal thoughts, enhancing monitoring based on individual levels of suicide risk, instituting mental health triage and referral protocols, assigning a facility mental health team to manage treatment needs of suicidal and mentally ill patients, and creating a suicide prevention-focused response team to track self-harm incidents, attempted suicides, and suicides. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Gerald Stevenson with a Crime Beat report. Workers preparing a classroom for Jewish students set to return after summer break at Temple Emmanuel in San Diego's Del Cerro neighborhood last week found two bullet holes from shots fired at the building. The synagogue is located on Capri Drive near College Avenue. The Anti-Defamation League of San Diego is offering a $3,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of whoever fired those shots. San Diego police are investigating, but say it's unknown whether the motive was a hate crime. The incident comes just 4 months after the deadly shooting at the Chabad of Poway synagogue, where a woman was killed and three others injured, including the rabbi. That shooter was taken into custody. The Anti-Defamation League says anti-Semitic incidents have risen for the past 3 years in a row in California, including a 27% increase last year. The ADL's regional director in San Diego, Tammy Giles, says the ADL takes any report of violence against a religious institution extremely seriously, adding, by offering the $3,000 reward, the organization hopes that someone with critical information for investigators will be motivated to speak out. If you have any information on who fired shots at the Del Cerro Synagogue, please call the San Diego Police Department at 858-495-7900.
The public is invited to attend the first ever Economic Crimes Forum in East County, hosted by seven chambers of commerce. The event will be held on Tuesday, September 10th at the Grossmont College Theater from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Attendees will learn how scams and cybercrimes impact businesses and the community. Experts from the District Attorney's Office will teach those who attend how to protect themselves and their businesses from becoming victims of fraud and other economic-related crimes. District Attorney Summer Steffen says, "We have an entire division dedicated to prosecuting economic crimes and holding the perpetrators accountable. But our prosecutors and investigators are also using their expertise to stop these crimes from happening in the first place and to protect the business community." The seven chambers of commerce hosting the Economic Crimes Forum are the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce, the East County Economic Development Council, the Spring Valley Chamber of Commerce, the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce, the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce, the Alpine Chamber of Commerce, and the Santee Chamber of Commerce. Anyone interested in attending should RSVP to Kathy Castle by emailing info@lakesidechamber.org or calling 619-561-1031. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features Berry Picking in Julian, the Saquon Powwow, Kids Care Fest, Grape Stomps in Julian, Campo and Ramona, and the grand opening of the Magnolia Center in El Cajon.
Plus, we have a preview of coming events, including the Santee Bluegrass Festival, Fall at the Farm in Julian, Astronomy Night on Mount Helix, Mean Mary in Concert in Santee, concerts and classic cruises in El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Julian Farm and Orchard has 24 acres with over 2,000 berry plants. On Saturdays and Sundays from now through September, you can pick blackberries and raspberries from 12 to 3 p.m. The farm is located just up the road from Julian Mining Company on Highway 78 on the Santa Isabel side of the highway.
The Saquon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will hold its 30th annual powwow from Friday evening, September 6th through Sunday, September 8th at the Saquon Powwow Ground on Tahisa Road in El Cajon. The event features bird singing and Native American dance competitions, drumming, Native arts and crafts vendors, foods, and more.
Grossmont Healthcare District invites you to Kids Care Fest on Saturday, October 5th, from 9 a.m. to 12 noon at the Lemon Grove Recreational Center. The event includes healthy fun for the kid in all of us, including fun and active games, plus dental and vision screenings, flu shots, and more. For details, visit kidscarefest.org.
Fall is harvest season at East County's wineries. On September 7th, the 23rd annual Julian Grape Stomp Festa will be held at Mangini Winery in Julian from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can join in this old world tradition by kicking off your shoes and squishing grapes. There is an admission cost as well as an optional VIP package that includes shaded seating, a gourmet cheese platter, snacks, and more. For full details or tickets, you can check out visitjulian.com and click on the September 7th Grape Stomp Festa event on their calendar.
Campo Creek Vineyards in Campo will host a grape picking and stomping party complete with barbecue on September 7th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event admission includes barbecue tri-tip and chicken provided by Hefty Boy Barbecue, and drink tickets are available, along with wine by the glass, water, and soda. RSVP at CampoCreekVineyards.com.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, will host its grand reopening on September 10th from 5 to 8 p.m., and the City of El Cajon, along with Live Nation, invites the public to this event. It includes food, fun, activities, prizes, tours, and presentations. The Magnolia also has a full season of stellar entertainment lined up, starting September 12th. For tickets and the full lineup, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or see the Magnolia on Facebook.
The annual Ramona Grape Stomp will be held on Saturday, September 14th from 2 to 7 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Guests are invited to take part in the Grape Stomp competition or squish grapes just for fun. You can also sample award-winning local wines and craft beers, do some early holiday shopping with over 40 artisans and merchants, find treasures in a silent auction, and for the kids, there will be face painting and other children's activities. For tickets to the Ramona Grape Stomp and more information, you can visit RamonaGrapeStomp.com.
The City of Santee Parks and Recreation Committee's annual Bluegrass Festival, a fundraiser for people, parks, and programs, is scheduled for September 14th at Town Center Community Park. This year's event marks a decade in existence for the festival. This year's musical lineup features two talented bluegrass bands, the Vulcan Mountain Boys and Mojave Soul, plus tastes from local restaurants, wineries, and breweries. Beyond the music, food, and drink samples, the event includes giving trees featuring a wide range of donated gifts, including gift certificates for restaurants and local attractions, hotel stays, and more. Attendees can also purchase opportunity drawing tickets for a chance to win additional prizes. Since the inaugural charity event in 2010, this festival has generated nearly $325,000, and attendance has grown to nearly 2,000. The proceeds from the festival are all used to support the Santee Teen Center, park improvement projects, and subsidized recreation scholarship programs for seniors and low to moderate income families. Festival information is available at SanteeBluegrassFestival.com.
The San Diego Astronomy Association will host Astronomy Night in the Mount Helix Park on September 14th, starting at 6 p.m. Park at the fire station on Vivera to take a shuttle to the top of Mount Helix, where telescopes will be set up and lights turned off. If you are disabled and need assistance, call 619-741-4363. Here are some of the celestial sights you may observe: a nearly full moon rising, bright planets including Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn, constellations, the Andromeda Galaxy, nebulas, and more. You can find more information at mounthelixpark.org.
International touring musician Mean Mary will be performing in Santee on September 21st at 7 p.m. in the Summit UU Fellowship Church on Cottonwood Avenue. Known internationally for her lightning-fast fingers and throaty vocal sound, Mean Mary's songs travel the genres of roots, bluegrass, blues, and folk rock. Her real name is Mary James, and she could read music before she could read words. She started writing songs at age 5, and by 7, she was proficient on vocals, guitar, banjo, and violin, setting out on road shows, plus TV, radio, and film appearances. Today, she plays 11 instruments, and she tours internationally. She's also an award-winning songwriter. Her original banjo song, Iron Horse, the story of a Native American maiden and her horse racing a train, was named Best Americana Song by the Independent Music Awards. Born in Alabama to a family that lived in a tent before building a cabin in the woods, Mary grew up roughing it before launching her musical career, and just as her success was taking off, a vehicle accident injured her neck, paralyzed one of her vocal cords, and nearly killed her. But she kept on singing, and it paid off when, miraculously, her vocal cord recovered. The September 21st show in the Santee UU Fellowship Church will include songs from Mean Mary's new Cold album CD to be released October 4th, and a lot of her old favorites as well.
Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Fall at the Farm. Each weekend from September 21st through October 31st, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The fun includes hay rides, apple cider pressing, a pumpkin patch, farm animals, berry and apple picking. You can also see an apple pie making demonstration or try your hand at archery, candle dipping, or axe throwing. A seasonal farm store called The Farmer's Wife features farmhouse decor, homemade candles, potpourri, goat's milk soap, and more country wares. You can find more information at julianminingcompany.com and click on the You Pick link to find activities at Julian Farm and Orchard under the same family ownership.
El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The shows will continue through September. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the restaurants nearby before rocking out at the outdoor concerts. Upcoming performances include Stars on the Water Yacht Rock on September 6th, a Tom Petty tribute by the Petty Breakers September 13th, The Mighty Untouchables with contemporary and dance music September 20th, and a Back to the Gardens Beatles show September 27th for the season finale, and that one has a special 6:30 start time. For full details, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
El Cajon's classic cruise nights continue in the fall months each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
My name is Oday Youssef. You are here listening to the Chaldean Corner, where we give you as much information as we can about the Chaldean community here in East County and across San Diego.
Former State Senator Wadi Deda, the first Iraqi-American elected to public office in the United States and a longtime leader in our region's Iraqi Chaldean community, died August 27th at his Poway home, just days before his 99th birthday. Hailed as a statesman and an American success story by leaders on both sides of the political aisle, Deda's legacy includes authoring the bill that established Caltrans, the California Department of Transportation, as well as inspiring generations of immigrants to attain the American dream. Born in Baghdad in 1920, Deda was raised in a politically active family with two uncles in the Iraqi parliament. After his father died, Deda dropped out of school at age 14, but a priest later instilled in him the importance of education and taught Deda his first English words from the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Deda went on to obtain a degree from the University of Baghdad and came to America in the 1940s. He married, moved from Detroit to Chula Vista, and became a teacher of political science. After working on John F. Kennedy's presidential campaign, Deda ran for the State Assembly in 1967 and later the State Senate serving over 25 years in the state legislature. He was noted for reaching across the aisle to forge political consensus. Upon his retirement in 1993, Senate President Pro Tem David Roberti called Detta the heart of the Senate. Detta later ran for Congress but was defeated by Bob Filner. He returned to teaching at Southwestern Community College and worked as a lobbyist. He helped build St. Peter's Chaldean Catholic Cathedral in El Cajon and remained a strong voice championing the immigrant community throughout his long lifetime. A documentary film titled The Lion's Journey, The Story of Wadi P. Detta, was released in 2009, hailing Detta as a true American statesman who endured death threats during the Gulf War, yet won respect and friendship of Democrats and Republicans alike, working to benefit his community and all Californians. His autobiography, titled Only in America, An Immigrant Success Story, was published in December 2018, when he was 98 years old. The book documents how Detta reminds us all of the principles on which America was founded and how that inspired him to achieve great things. A painted portrait of Detta was commissioned recently by the San Diego Library as part of its Living Legends collection. Former Governor Pete Wilson once hailed Detta as a great patriot and a great teacher, also praising his political courage and honesty. Upon news of his passing, local leaders posted their memories of Detta on Facebook. Barry Jantz, CEO of the Grossmont Healthcare District and a former legislative aide in Sacramento, called Detta a leader and a gentleman. Former East County Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Scott Alevi remembered Detta as dignified, honest, and classy, adding, "We could use more like the senator." Lemon Grove Councilman George Gastel called Detta a statesman without peers who helped build the local Chaldean Christian community here in East County. Mark Arabo, Detta's nephew and a human rights leader, wrote, "We all lost a legendary person and a beautiful soul." Survivors include his wife of 68 years, Mary Lynn, a son, presiding San Diego Superior Court Judge, Peter Detta, three grandchildren, two brothers, and a sister. A memorial service for Wadi Detta will be held on September 18th at St. Vincent Catholic Church. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Lynn Morgan Spreen, author of Dakota Blues, which won the Next Generation Indie Festival Award. In the last couple of years, my guest has transitioned from journalist, columnist, and human resources executive to full-time writer and blogger. Welcome, Lynn. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Lynn, although Dakota Blues is a work of fiction, the story is based on the lives of your ancestors, German immigrants who settled in North Dakota in the late 1800s. Can you tell us a little about the history of that, of your family, and what inspired you to turn it into fiction?
I went there recently, and I was just stunned by the stories that I was hearing from my extended family, many of whom I was meeting for the first time. They were telling me stories of how the immigrants, how difficult they had it. And, I mean, they would come over on ships, and then trains, and then, you know, wagons. And there was nothing there for them to build houses with. No trees. They didn't realize this. So they had to build, like, dugouts in the ground. And they lived, essentially, in holes in the ground for the first couple of summers.
I mean, winters.
Yes. Through the first couple of winters. And then, as their fortunes improved, they would build houses out of, like, clumps of sod, called soddies, then stone, then finally lumber. And the things they went through were just so shocking. I wanted to convey those stories through my fiction. Although I'm not a historian, I didn't want those stories to be lost. Right. So by writing what my preferred fiction is, a work of, you know, telling the story of a woman in midlife who's having to start all over again, she finds her resiliency by reaching down into her history and pulling up the strength of those ancestors. So it's kind of a cool way to be able to tell the story of my family
right.
in this way.
So for you, the history really inspired the story. It wasn't that you had always planned on writing this kind of story or
exactly
even a book.
Exactly true. Exactly true. The stories are just so stunning. In fact, if I could just say one thing, the Banat Germans, that's my ancestry, they had a saying, to the first generation is death, to the second is hardship, to the third is success.
Wow.
They took the long view of investing for their family's good.
Wow. Very poignant.
Yeah, I know.
Well, your book, Dakota Blues, was recognized by the Next Generation Indie Festival Award. As I understand it, this is a contest for independent authors and publishers. Would you like to say something about independent publishing? What inspires you to make it on your own instead of going the traditional route?
You know, I think that you would be making it on your own even if you went the traditional route these days.
Right.
I don't think there's any such thing the way that things are changing.
Yes.
And so I figured if I'm going to have to do all the marketing, you know, I have the kind of little red hen theory of book publishing.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to have to, you know, grow the wheat and mill the wheat and turn it into flour and make the bread, I'm probably going to enjoy the benefits myself. But more than that, I think even traditionally published authors have to do all of their own marketing these days.
Right.
I enjoy doing the marketing, but more than that, I enjoy the control, being able to create the book cover myself or decide what the format's going to be. And also, there's a greater profit margin, frankly, if you're selling your own books rather than having to support a Madison Avenue operation. So I think the idea is also that you can publish more quickly. You can publish a book in 6 months if you can get it written, whereas with the traditional model, it takes years and years and years to first find an agent and then to get a publishing house, of which there are fewer. So if you like control like I do, kind of a control freak, and also the speed and the revenues, I think those are my answers.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm doing it. I would encourage others to also.
Well, it sounds like the changes that are going on in society are aligned with what you enjoy.
Yes.
I know you've said that you want people to read about midlife characters, and you have a midlife character in your book. You want them to know about the midlife experience and triumphing over age. What kind of feedback have you received from readers about having an older heroine rather than a younger one?
Oh, this is the most gratifying thing. You know, there are over 70 million people over 50 in this country right now.
Really?
And it's getting, you know, there are more and more every day. Judging from both comments to my blog and also the reviews that I'm getting for my book, people are saying, this is so great. I'm tired of reading about young people. I want to know what's going to happen in the second half.
Right.
And so the idea of a coming-of-age story at midlife is sort of gaining traction. And that's what people are telling me, that they're excited to read about an older person now and what challenges she has.
So what kinds of books do you foresee in the second half of your life?
For me to write, or things that I think other people will write?
For you to write.
Oh, all I want to write about is this. The same thing. I love the challenges that we face as people in the second half. I think there is so much internal growth. We have so many gifts. There's so much power.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in our culture, we really don't celebrate that.
Right.
That's what I rejoice in. I get so much, I enjoy that so much, telling people, you just don't even know what your strengths are. Let's talk about it. And that's what I write about in story form, in fiction.
That's an inspiring message.
Thanks.
Well, that brings us to your blog, also referred to as Midlife Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your blog and how you see blog writing in the modern writer's life.
My blog, Any Shiny Thing, I called it that because, like, you know, some birds, you know, they get distracted easily by shiny things. And
right.
I didn't want to be limited to one particular topic. But it is about midlife, and I have a controversial recommendation for authors as far as blogging. Right now, everybody's told, all debut authors, all aspiring authors are told, oh, you must have a blog, you must have a blog. Blogs are wonderful. I think you absolutely must have a website. I think as often as you can, you should tinker with that website so as to draw traffic to the website. for the purpose of marketing your book. You need to know why you are blogging. If you're blogging because you want to express yourself artistically and you want to see your words in print and mm-hmm. you want to perfect your writing, it's really mm-hmm. a good vehicle for that. But for marketing, I honestly think it takes a lot of time away from what you should be doing, which is your number one priority, creating more stories. And if you are a fiction author, I don't think it's the best way to build a market. If that's your goal, there are other social network platforms already established that can give you a better return on your time for that.
And why do you say that for fiction writers?
Because if I work really hard to bring a lot of people to my blog and they all buy my book, so let's say that's 3,000 people, I make 3,000 sales. Now what? Those 3,000 people are continuing to come back to my blog. We're communing, we're enjoying each other's company. My blog has grown to the point where now it's a campfire, and right. we're all sitting around it talking. But right. those people have already bought my book. I need new customers.
I see.
If I want to reach out to new customers, that is not the easiest way to do it. It's gratifying for a number of other reasons, but as far as developing a platform for future sales, I really think there are other things that would provide a better payoff, to be
very
frank.
Interesting. Well, thanks for that insight. Mm-hmm. One last question, Lynn. What story are you working on right now, and when will that become available?
Oh, this is so exciting. It's a collection of short stories. It's called Boomer Love, Short Stories of Midlife and Beyond.
Hmm.
And the reason that I'm writing it is because I have so many stories in my head of characters who I want to show that they are, you know, dealing with this midlife deal, and how they overcome the challenges and move on in a powerful way, and then they experience joy. Or, not to be a spoiler, but in some of my stories, I actually have them see the light and then run back to their safe place that right. isn't so good for them.
Not experience the joy.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I'm going to be doing. It should be available in probably spring. But after I do that, then I'm going to do a sequel to Dakota Blues.
Okay. Well, looking forward to it.
Thanks.
Our time is up, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Lynn Morgan Spreen, please visit our website at www.inanyshinything.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, will host its much-anticipated grand reopening on September 10th from 5 to 8 p.m. The City of El Cajon and Live Nation invite the public to this event, which includes food, fun, activities, prizes, tours, and presentations. The theater has been closed for over a decade, but now after major renovations, the stage is set for the curtain to rise once again under management of Live Nation, the world's largest concert promoter. The Magnolia has a full season of headliner entertainment starting on September 12th. For tickets and the full lineup, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or visit the Magnolia on Facebook. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ bringing you some special information as we enter fire season. How prepared are you for an emergency? Just as you change your smoke detector batteries whenever you change your clocks for daylight savings time, it's also a smart idea to check your emergency kit at the start of every fire season. That means now. Of course, emergencies such as an earthquake or a blackout can happen at any time with no advance warning. For households with children, elderly people, or those with limited mobility, being ready to take action is especially important. Updating your emergency list should start with a checklist. Did you add or lose any members of your household? Be sure to have enough supplies for everyone, including people and pets. Check the dates on canned goods and other perishables, and be sure that stored drinking water is still good. Create an emergency plan for your family. Identify two places for the family to meet. One should be somewhere outside your home, but close by, perhaps a neighbor's or a street corner.
The other should be a spot away from your neighborhood, just in case the entire area is evacuated and you can't return. Using information from SDG&E and supplementing it with some additional tips, we've come up with the following helpful suggestions to be prepared. Practice an evacuation plan with your family, including children. If they get used to doing something when there is no panic, they will be much less frantic should a real disaster strike. Review emergency plans at your workplace, your child's school or daycare center, friends' homes, and other places where members of your family regularly spend time. Plan safe routes away from your home and business to high, safe ground, and be sure all family members know the routes. Have alternative routes in mind if the first option is blocked. Develop a plan for family pets and livestock, and have a backup plan because some evacuation shelters may not allow animals. Designate a friend or family member outside the area who all family members can call if you become separated, and that way you can know if everyone is safe. Have family members memorize that phone number in case cell phones die and you can't access the phone directory. Keep current important documents in a safe deposit box or send copies outside the area to be kept by a trusted relative or friend. Be sure that you can access your insurance policy and have a copy of your deed, for example. After Hurricane Katrina, when banks were destroyed by flooding and hurricanes, many homeowners had a lot of trouble putting in their insurance claims. Have a set place for your emergency supplies. Your emergency kit should include, at minimum, a 3-day supply of bottled water, 1 gallon per person per day, plus extra for pets or anyone with special needs, a 3-day supply of packaged, dried, and canned food that can be prepared without cooking, a first aid kit, and essential medicines for all family members, a pet carrier for each pet and pet food, a manual can opener, a portable radio, plenty of batteries and flashlights kept in waterproof bags, an extra set of car keys, credit cards, and always plenty of cash in case the power is out when ATM machines and credit card machines are not working. Special items for infants, elderly, or disabled family members. It's also important to make sure that you always keep plenty of gas in your car since pumps won't work when the power goes out. Also, be sure you have a car charger for your cell phones, since during a power outage, you don't want your cell phone to go dead. Car chargers are cheap, often less than $10, but can be crucial in an emergency. Know how to operate everything if the electricity is off, the keyless entry to your home, and an electric garage door and gates, for instance. Be sure you know how to open them manually. If you have a gas main, know how to shut it off in case of a leak or a disaster. Include instructions on how to shut off anything that's complicated in your family emergency kit. It's better to have supplies ready and never need them than to need them and not have them. SDG&E has also prepared some videos on fire season planning and general emergency preparedness that can be accessed in the Wildfire and Emergency section of our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.